Craig Hoffman.
I'm just saying, I think it's possible.
Are you keeping that hope alive? Because you already know, I already told you, I'm the king of the clip. And I did slip up this week.
The Hoffman Show.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
Tuesday.
I'm king of the clip. You're 0 for 1. That's what you are. You're 0 for 1.
I slipped up. I was coming off of, you know, a tough weekend.
You're coming off a great weekend.
All right, a great weekend.
You had exactly locked back in. Hey, Haney.
Yes, sir.
We're back in practice,
yes,
bro.
Yes, sir.
Head in the game.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
This ain't even practice. This is a real thing. All right, final hour of the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Metal Chris in for Anthony. I am, Chris, that's a funny hour opener for you to play because Haney getting back from vacation was kind of the nexus of that, and now that he's gone to France for a week, I'm terrified of what it will be like when he gets back. How long is it going to take Anthony to get his head out of the croissants and lock back in?
And that I can't tell you.
I don't know either. Well, hopefully quickly. Hopefully he's back with a weekend to recover and get his brain back on American time. But we'll see. That's not even next week problem. That's a 2 weeks from now problem. So we'll get to that then. Wrapping up here, opening the final hour of the show, talking about the latest on RFK Stadium, because we've now heard from some of the stakeholders. We talked about this yesterday with Eric Flack, who's new reporting on the fact that the DC City Council is taking some of the stadium considerations the stadium proposal out of the budget, which could push the decision on it past the July 15th deadline. Not what I think Commanders fans who just want to see this deal done are looking for. Obviously, getting a deal done that's a good deal for all involved is important. And that leads us to the comments this morning on the Sports Junkies by Mark Ein, who I believe might join us next week as well. So we'll look forward to following up with Ein then. But also, Charles Allen, the city council member who represents Ward 6, he was on Grant and Danny earlier today. So let's hear first from Ein, who was asked about, you know, how concerned are you that this isn't going exactly as you had hoped, as there looks to be some delays here in getting the stadium deal approved, done, and signed by the time the Commanders wanted it to be.
You know, you can look at it from so many different dimensions, but like, first of all, in D.C., there have been 3 stadiums built. And every single one has transformed the area it was in. If you guys, when I moved back to D.C. in the 90s, I lived down the street from where Cap One Arena was. That literally a block away was a red light district. You know, the East End was forgotten. No one came over. You build Cap One, that part of town's completely transformed. Then you do the baseball stadium. You go drive down there. It's actually incredible. I don't ever go down there and it blows my mind how an old industrial area is now literally just building after building after building. And then you go to the soccer stadium where I actually own the land under the soccer stadium. It was a junkyard and an old warehouse. And there was a coal-fired Pepco power plant there that was never going to move until the land was needed. You build a soccer stadium, it gets transformed. So like we have these case studies of what happens. And then you have 180 acres on that part of town where it hasn't gotten the same investment. And here's the perfect catalyst to do exactly the same thing, but actually even bigger. So that's one lens. And then the other thing I'd say is, you know, I've lived the journey here. I was on the board to bring the Olympics here. I was co-chair of the group to try to bring the 2026 World Cup to DC. And that was so frustrating because FIFA badly wanted to have games in DC next year. It's very unusual for a capital city not to get games, but we didn't have a stadium. They made us bid for the World Cup with the Baltimore Stadium. And what people may forget is that the National Fan Festival for the World Cup was going to be on the National Mall. We were going to have 3 of the biggest teams staying in D.C. All that's gone. And yeah, that's nice because you get to go to games, but the economic impact of stuff like that is so massive. You know, and then you listen at the press conference, Roger talked about that, you know, he had no promises, but certainly you're going to be considered for Super Bowls. The economic impact in New Orleans was $1.2 billion for the Super Bowl. So, like, these things are economic drivers.
So those numbers from Ein are, I think are worth pointing out that those are numbers that many economists disagree with in terms of the economic impact. I also think it's kind of undeniable there's a large economic impact. There just is. Like, it's just a massive amount of revenue. And unlike, you know, some of the other things that economists point out about stadiums, where they're like, well, the entertainment dollars will be spent somewhere. And if the stadium, they're not spent at the stadium, they'll be spent at the movie theater. And if they're not spent at the movie theater, they'll be spent at the restaurant. And it's like all of these things that economists point out just eventually don't pass the logic test of what happens if you have something that has a million people come to it. And specifically for the district, to have that money spent in the district versus Maryland and Virginia is a big deal to have the jobs. And I think Mark's first point that he made about the economic transformation or the transformation period of the different areas that he's referenced with Southeast, with Audi Field, Southwest, with Nats Park, and then Capital One Arena, it's very clearly been success stories. The question is for whom? I think that's always one of the considerations is like, okay, well, we don't want to kick people out of their homes. You know, if there is low income housing and people that have lived there for generations at any income level, we're not looking to you know, kick people out. But if you literally have nothing, and this is, I think, another unique thing to RFK, you know, Nats Park, you could at least make some kind of argument that you misplaced a lot of people, you displaced a lot of people, that the changing nature of that part of town, like, really upset what had been the status quo. And some of that you could argue is good with crime rates or this or that. But that those are, you know, that's not about the people. That's about the resources. And that's a whole separate conversation. But you now have a ton of luxury apartments. Like, oh, yeah, they look how much housing they created. Yeah, it's all just very, very expensive. And so part of the RFK deal is that there's going to be affordable housing, and like that stuff all needs to be really relevant. That stuff all needs to be centered to make sure that you are taking care of the people in the neighborhoods that you are disrupting, but also understanding the trickle down effects of, and I don't say trickle down because that's a specific economic term and a hot take. I don't think trickle down economics actually work, but the second order effects of the economic movement that happens of, okay, this tax revenue is generated from this thing, and then that goes over here in this pile, and that funds that thing, and that can ultimately help drive the future of a city because kids have better experiences at school and learn more and get better grades and go to better schools and come back and are the future leaders that invent the thing that does the thing and make all of our lives better. So, you know, the numbers and how these things are calculated are typically very friendly to the cities because these are often legacy projects for politicians. But there's also some amount of logic that just some of, you know, we've had Andy Zimbalist on the show. We've had the other economist who hates stadiums. Like, we've had those guys on the show, and there's some amount of logic tests that I find hard to believe on some of their arguments as well, but they're the economists, and I am not. All right. Charles Allen was on with Grant and Danny. Of course, he is the Ward 6 City Council member today, and let's... Actually, Chris, this was not on our list, Metal Chris, but can you pull up the clip 12 for a second, and then we'll play some of the ones that I previously identified. But clip Grant and Danny, amongst the other larger picture stuff that we'll get to next, asked about a piece of news that came out recently that the Nats have actually paid off their loans early. And since we were just talking about Nats Park and the transformation at Navy Yard, I thought this would be an interesting thing to let you hear in terms of how that impacts this situation with RFK Stadium moving forward and the city budgets.
There's nothing about the ballpark why the bonds are being paid off early. That's 2/3 of the ballpark fee that go into that come from taxes around the rest of the city. That's a choice that the city's making to free up our ability to finance this deal. And we have to actually pay a penalty to do it. So paying off the bonds at the ballpark has nothing to do with, hey, isn't it been successful?
Interesting.
Because 2/3 of the money that go into the ballpark fee come from other places all over the city. and we're actually going to have to pay a penalty to pay that off. So we're paying more. That's all about freeing up debt cap space so that we can do financing for another deal.
Gotcha. No, that's good to know. I still would say it's a success sitting in the Navy Yard right now working.
I don't disagree.
And we wouldn't have been doing that otherwise, but yeah.
I don't disagree with you. That part's been very successful, but in terms of paying off the bonds early, that's not a link you can make around the success around the ballpark. Creating a venue that has more than 200 events per year, big major events, that drives success. That's why you heard me early on arguing for the arena, locking down the Nats to get a renewed lease. But a football stadium with 20 to 25 events is a fundamentally different thing than something that happens all year long.
I think that's well put in terms of how some of this works by Charles Allen, and also the fact that there's just some accounting tricks that are going to have to be done here. And that's what it sounds like. Hey, we'll pay this small price, but this opens up this other thing over here. And that allows us to do this other thing over here. And hopefully it all works out in the end. And that's up to the accountants. And it's up to, you know, that's why we elect these people to do that kind of hard work. And we hope that they do it earnestly, honestly. And that gets to kind of where we are now with RFK, which is, are they doing it earnestly and honestly, or are they doing it to make political statements and get their pound of flesh? And is this just a giant political fight, or is there substantive issues at play? Charles Allen gave his perspective. You'll hear it through more of his conversation with Grant and Danny next here on The Hoffman Show. But first, latest from the world of women's sports, presented to you by Wawa Chicken. How you want it at Wawa, with customizable roasted and crispy chicken sandwiches. Our weekend preview is coming up in just a little bit here on The Hoffman Show. Right now, continuing to talk about the latest news around the RFK Stadium deal that is, let's call it, tenuous at the moment between D.C. City Council and the Washington Commanders and the mayor's office. Of course, the mayor's office and the commanders are on one side of the table, so to speak. City Council is on the other. And Charles Allen is a city council member who, Ward 6, is representative, who joined Grant and Danny earlier today. And to hear from him now on some of this, starting off with kind of why is there delay? I will not re-ask all of the questions because we have Grant and Danny's questions in these clips here. But the premise here of kind of like, why are we having this discussion versus just passing this thing? The mayor and the commanders must have done a great deal. What does city council want to know?
So what is the bigger issue then? Because the last part you say is not a good deal. That's debatable. And that is continuing to be debated by a lot of people. But the other part is we need more time. We don't have enough time. So what is the issue? That the deal's not good, mm-hmm. or that you need more time?
Well, both. I mean, I don't know, the last time you spent over $1 billion, but you probably didn't do it in just a couple of weeks. So you got to spend a little time being able to look at it. We have a independent economic analysis that's taking place. It'll come back in the next couple of weeks. We've got tons of questions that have gone out that we don't have answers to. Spend it a few weeks, spend it a few months to make sure you get it right for when you're talking about over $1 billion. I mean, this is the second largest public subsidy for a stadium in American history. You got to get that right. So we're going to take our time and make sure we do that.
Seems fair. The only question that we'll get to a little bit later, Charles Allen's answer to, is like, at what cost? At some point, the waiting, one, answering these questions costs money in its own right. These independent executive or economic advisors don't do this stuff for free. So inherently, by looking into all of this, you are spending money. That said, if that money spent gets a better deal for the city, that could pay for itself and then some by a factor of a lot. So as they look at this deal, logical follow-up was,
so what are some of those questions, council member, that you say haven't been answered yet that you're looking for answers to?
Oh, great question. So right now, you know, we're trying to figure out, so how is this thing financed? So right now, let's take a look at the parking. I've been very critical of 8,000 parking spaces. That's way too much. But right now, the deal is structured that not only does D.C. taxpayers build all these massive parking lots that'll sit empty most of the time, but all the parking revenue goes to the team. They don't pay any taxes on it. That's not even how we deal with the other parking lots. So have they built the financing that they're putting in based off of just taking all your parking money and skipping over the tax dollars? What are some of the fundamentals and financials around this deal? Those are the types of questions you got to ask. How are you going to move 65,000 people here? I've got a whole series of questions to our metro system with the commander saying, help me understand how you're going to move people in and out of here. Those are questions that your legislative body, your elected leaders have got to get answers to. So there's a ton of things we're still trying to make sure we understand.
Again, logical and fair. Now, what I will say on the other side of that is, I don't know how much the commanders have actually answered those questions. And Alan is like, and like, I don't know. He might be 100% right that they don't have answers or have not answered yet. I do find there to be a little bit of cognitive dissonance of that's too many parking spots, but I don't understand how you're going to get everybody there. There's obviously the answer might be metro. And then it's like, well, our metro isn't up ready for that. So how are we going to pay for that? Updating the metro stations. Is that on us or is that part of your $2.3 billion? So again, these are all valid questions. And I will say in the name of journalism that if this stuff was more public, then we'd have some of the answers. Like, yes, we have elected you to do this, city council and Mayor Bowser, as citizens of the district. But for instance, when you are kicking Mark Seagraves out of meetings where this stuff is being discussed, we are just sitting here waiting on stuff that we would also, as the public, would like answers to. And thus, more transparency does feel like it would be better. But what do I know? I'm just a guy with a radio show. The Hoffman Show is this radio show here on the Team 980. Grant and Danny, our counterparts over on 106.7 The Fan, at Charles Allen, city council member who you've been hearing from earlier today. And they asked him my big question, like this July 15th deadline that Mayor Bowser and the team have put down. Like, what's the deal with that?
So when you say it's going well, that that's good. For the team, though, they were hoping this would be wrapped up in the summer. And they put out a statement, I believe yesterday, maybe the day before, suggesting that July 15th is still vital here. And you just said you're going to have hearings 2 weeks after that, and you're talking about the fall, which is not the same timeline as theirs. And it sounds like maybe even in the fall that you're hoping to agree to a deal that isn't even on the table yet, right?
There have to be a lot of changes. And,
right.
And so that's going to take a little time, but I would expect you'd see a vote sometime in the fall. But you know,
when you say the fall, is that September? Is that November? Like, what do you mean by that?
My hunch would be it's more in the September-October timeframe, but there's not a set date on that. But listen, if you were the commanders or if you're the mayor, of course you're going to tell everybody, gosh, it's got to happen by this date or everything falls apart. Listen, the commanders have made no secret. They want to be in D.C. And D.C. is coming in full faith, working hard to figure out, is there a deal that can be had here and what changes have to happen? So people need to have a little bit of ice water in their veins here and realize, like, this is a $1 billion industry. We're all talking to each other and working toward what will ultimately be a decision.
Very mature answer, but like the July 15th deadline, what they're saying is if we don't hit it, it's the Women's World Cup, can't bid for it. Commanders 2030 season, not going to be ready. So if that, like, is that a real deadline? That to me is the core question. And they asked Charles Allen about it on GND.
What bluff to call? It's not going to happen by July 15th. So it's an artificial deadline that people want to put on us. For what?
But they could go back to Maryland and get the project started if they wanted to.
Really? Governor Moore is already talking about the future of that site and how he finally has a chance to do something different there. That's not going to happen. This is so different than what you saw take place in Virginia, where D.C. worked hard to get Cap 1 back, which should never even gotten to that place. The dynamics are not playing out similarly here. You've got a commander's team that wants to be in D.C. You've got D.C. leaders that are in good faith negotiating and working with the team on that. So I'm not worried about a July 15th date at all. I don't think you should be either.
It depends. Like, that feel, what Charles Allen is telling you there is he, and I assume his colleagues on the council, think that's a fake deadline that is meant to put pressure on them. And when he referenced earlier, like, having ice water in his veins, like, we're just going to stare down that deadline and be like, go ahead. What are you going to do? My question is, like, what is the real deadline then? When can this get done by, or when does this have to be done by, to start construction in time that FIFA will be like, yes, we will give you the 2031 Women's World Cup? Because not only would it probably be a game or two, they'd like, I think after skipping us in 2026 for the Men's World Cup, because our stadium currently is not up to par, I think they'll give 2031 Women's World Cup to the U.S. for the final. Like, I think the Women's World Cup in 2031 will be won at a stadium yet to be built at the RFK Stadium site if this thing gets done on time. So when is done on time? And then also the 2030, before that, 2030 NFL season. It's got to be ready by September of 2030. Otherwise, the Commanders cannot play. I don't think they're going to say, like, oh, well, okay, we'll play our home games and have our new home opener starting in November. Or we'll play our entire road schedule first so that our home opener is in November. Like, no, that's not how it's going to go down. There's certain things you could probably do, like certain finishing touches that you could put on the stadium afterwards. Like, you have to get it operational. But, like, that stuff takes time. And that time is shrinking away quickly in a heavily unionized city, which I am all, you know, for in terms of the electricians and the construction folks and everybody else who making sure they have their protections. But then you have to negotiate the deals with the unions. That limits construction to certain parameters. And, like, there's a lot of stuff that you have to navigate that is in place for good reasons that doesn't change your timeline to be, you know, get bent necessarily just to build a football stadium because you're trying to do this thing. Like, this stuff is complicated, and there is a real deadline somewhere. And what I have yet to hear from anyone is what that real deadline is. If it's not July 15th and the Commanders in the mayor's office are insisting that it is. But by the same token, you know, city council is just like, we don't want to be boxed in. And I get that too, because this is important to get it right. And so everyone kind of has a point, but there are, like, eventually somewhere deep within all of these points are some non-negotiables. And that's what nobody seems to have a concrete answer on. All right. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. For the full interview with Charles Allen, check Grant and Danny's podcast sometime this weekend. Just search Grant and Danny wherever you get your podcasts. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, it's our weekend preview, which is brought to you by nobody. All right. Coming up tomorrow night, the Washington Mystics will be at Dallas Wings. They had a heck of a win last Sunday against Dallas at home. Sonia Citron, the game winner. Sony, a great game, 21 points last night. The Wings tonight are hosting the Indiana Fever, who will not have Caitlin Clark. She is out with a groin injury. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim are hosting the Washington Nationals tonight. Nats get going 9:38 p.m. listed first pitch, very specific. Sad news, though, out of the Angels organization today. Longtime Major League manager and current Angels manager Ron Washington will remain on medical leave for the rest of the season, the team announced today. Ray Montgomery will manage the team for what remains of the season, and Ryan Goins will serve as his bench coach. The 73-year-old Washington was placed on leave last Friday because of an undisclosed medical issue. Wash was also covered Wash when he was the Texas Rangers manager from 2007 to 2014. Second year back as a major league manager in Anaheim, sending Wash the absolute best in his recovery. And again, Nats and Angels tonight around 9:40. That's what's trending. I'm Craig Hoffman on the Team 980. It's Hoffman Show on Team 980. We're always live as well on YouTube too at the Team 980, which I regret at the moment because I just sometimes during commercial breaks. Chris Metal Chris again in for Anthony today. I kind of slumped down in my chair, and normally I try to get back in like an appropriate on-air position. Oh, look at me! I'm a professional radio host. Before I hit go on the stream, take us out of commercial. And I was mid getting out of my chair, coming out of break there. And that's just, it's really a terrible job by me. It's really the summary of that story. Just looking like a lazy bum.
But we work so hard.
We do. You get it. And especially by, like, look, it's Friday at 6:30. Most people listening, I'd hope, are done working. I guess we probably have some people that listen while they work and you have a different schedule and, or I hope that you're not being kept at the office late on a Friday and you're listening at your cubicle or whatever else that you're in that situation. I wish the best for you. But it is, even though this is my job, 4 to 7, it's still 6:30 on a Friday. And, you know, there's that. I mean, then again, I have no place to complain because, Chris, you did the Russell show today, and then you doubled up and did my show. So, first of all, thank you. Second of all, how are you holding up, bro?
I'm doing good, man. It's nice that it's a Friday. These kind of doubles are worse when it's like a Monday, and you're like, man, I got a whole week full of work. So.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're doing well. Hopefully, I haven't made your job too difficult today. And now is the time that Anthony and I preview what's coming up this weekend. It's except for Anthony's in France, so I'll take this one. Chris, you just keep hitting the right buttons. You're doing a great job. And it's our weekend preview. And the ongoing joke is that it just like EJ's Neato Stat of the Night, most of the time on the NBA on TNT, it's brought to you by nobody. But if someone wants to step up and sponsor it, they're more than welcome. All right, let's start off in the WNBA. That's the busiest league this weekend. The Nationals will be in Los Angeles. We just talked about them and what's trending. Again, our best to Ron Washington in his recovery. But it's a big, fun weekend of WNBA basketball. A couple weeks until the All-Star break. Tonight, you got all kinds of fun. Tons of teams playing. The Mystics not amongst them, but you got Lynx Dream tonight. The Dream, a kind of surprise team at the W. They're 10-5 on the year. Brittany Griner in her first year in Atlanta. Ali Chagre is playing great. They lost their season opener to the Mystics and have really just been awesome. The was supposed to be marquee game of the night was Fever and Wings, marquee in the biggest sense, arguably two of the five biggest stars in the sport. Paige Bueckers, the number one pick in this past draft, taking on Caitlin Clark and the Fever. But Clark is out for this game. So they're actually playing it at American Airlines Center, the Mavericks Arena down there in Dallas, but Clark is out. It's still a matchup of two of the last three number one overall picks. It would have been three of the last three because Aaliyah Boston is on that Indiana Fever team, and she is facing off against Bueckers. Last time they were on a court together was the 2022 national title game won by Boston's University of South Carolina. Chicago Sky and Angel Reese are at Chase Center tonight, take on the very surprising good Golden State Valkyries. New York Liberty have dropped a couple here as of late, taking on a Phoenix Mercury team that is also kind of the other surprise of the league. They're 11-4, Liberty and 11-3, and then Sun and Storm tonight. Connecticut, not very good. Seattle's had a very, very good season. They're favored by almost 20 tonight at Seattle. Tomorrow, Mystics get back at it. One and only game on the schedule. They face Dallas back at the College Park Center in outside of Dallas in Arlington. So get the Wings on a back-to-back and a chance to pull themselves above 500. So that's exciting. Sunday, Liberty and Dream, Sky Sparks, Aces Mercury, Sun and Lynx, Storm Valkyrie, Mystics then on, when is that next game? They have all week off? I don't know. Now I'm all over the place on the schedule, and this is just fantastic radio. They got a three-game road trip. They were in Vegas last night. They got the win. At Dallas, and then Thursday, there it is, at Minnesota, who they beat without Nafisa Collier earlier in the week before coming home. And they'll play their back-to-back games at Eagle Bank Arena against Chicago and Las Vegas. Okay, that is the W schedule for the weekend. A couple of big soccer games this weekend as well. Women's international window is open. U.S. had a big 4-0 win last night. Rose Lavelle's return to the pitch for the U.S. Women's National Team for the first time since the Olympics. She's had a ton of injury issues, but worked her way back on the field. She had a couple of goals and an assist. Just an awesome night back. Alyssa Thompson with a goal. Sam Coffey with a goal. So phenomenal night for the U.S. They'll play Ireland again. And then they are in D.C. next week, July 2nd. They take on Canada. They're calling it the Continental Classico. So very much looking forward to that in D.C. next week. Then I believe the men are playing this weekend as well. Yes, indeed. The Gold Cup continuing. Quarterfinals, USA, Costa Rica. The U.S., we actually did a segment a couple weeks ago on a Friday on how much trouble U.S. men's soccer was in, and then they've actually shown themselves pretty well in the Gold Cup with a very, very unstar-laden roster. Some of their best players, Europeans, that are taking the summer off or hurt or recovering from injury or whatever it may be. And the U.S. Has been able to, you know, kind of put together some performances here, at least, very least, get some results. I think there's kind of a mix of both. Some of the performances have been lackluster with a result, but they've also had a couple of very nice performances. But they take Costa Rica, or take on Costa Rica, now out of the group stage into the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup. And that game is Sunday at 7 o'clock on Fox. Other than that, this weekend, NBA and NHL free agencies are around the corner. NHL draft is tonight. The Islanders have the first pick. Summer League will be starting before you know it. Some of the stuff in Salt Lake, and then ultimately Vegas doesn't start till July 10th. So keep your eyes out for that. But that is we're kind of in that time of the calendar where there's only so much going on. Yet there's still a lot of storylines, so we'll have plenty to talk about next week. All right, that's our weekend preview brought to you by nobody. When we get back, real things, real people said in real microphones as we wrap up the weekend on The Hoffman Show. All right, it's The Hoffman Show wrapping up here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up next week on the show, something I want to cover a little bit more and get into some more depth on is the Ace Bailey situation in Utah. The fifth overall pick in the draft had apparently told multiple teams in the top five, all the teams in the top five, like, don't draft me. So it seemed like he wanted to come to Washington or one of the teams that followed. So New Orleans at seven, or especially there was some rumors, and like everyone saying, oh, his floor is eight. He'll never get past eight. So clearly Brooklyn was a destination that if he got to there, they were going to take him, and that was pretty well known in league circles. And the reaction from Paul George and Draymond Green and longtime veterans in the league is like, kid, get to the league and shut up and do your work, and like, this is stupid, right? There's a lot of people around the league that are like, this is a joke. Like, who's this kid? Basically, it's a lot of, who does this kid think he is? And I think it's worth saying that, like, yeah, there's a lot. And as I've gotten older, like, trust me, I get it. Like, I am now almost double Ace Bailey's age. That's wild. That is wild. At the age of 35. But, like, I've certainly been like, wow, these kids, right? About any number of things. Ah, they don't get how the world works. But they're still people, and they're still human beings, and they are being recruited to play basketball at the absolute highest level in the world. And there should be some level of respect for their skill set in that way. And we just accept in American sports that drafts are a part of it, because that's how it's always been. That the draft is like, and we even celebrate it. And like, this is not, by the way, to take away from the coolness of a dream being realized and the, like, you know, think of all the, like, the guys who cry. Like, think of the reaction that Edgecombe had, that Maluak had, that all of Maluak had, that all these guys had, that was like, oh my God, my dream of making the NBA is realized. But to pretend like everyone has to react the same, and that we shouldn't have some critical thought about what it means for our most talented young people in sports to have a choice on where they actually want to go and work. Like, if you were the most talented person in your field entering it, coming out of college or coming out of high school, either way, like, you'd probably get to pick where you work in your field. And sure, you're always limited to who's going to offer you. It's got to go both ways. And there are team building aspects of this. And to me, I've always been like, it's actually not that hard. Like, there should be a rookie, you know, salary cap, basically. And, you know, if you are an amount of money allotted to each team for the draft, and depending on where you finish, you get more money. And so this year, like, forget the lottery. This year, the Wizards would have had the second most amount of money to spend on rookies. And, you know, if you're the number one guy, you're the team with the most money, you offer the guy that you think is the best player a contract, and he can either choose, yeah, I'm going to take the most money from you, or if he's like, I don't really want to mess with you, for maybe he thinks your franchise is incompetent, maybe he thinks that your franchise is in a location that he doesn't want to be in. Like, there, you can stagger the money enough that, like, most people are going to take the money. But if a kid really wants to go in a different direction, like, fine. But I think we take that for granted. And people look at Ace Bailey like, oh, you spoiled brat. And it's like, nah, he's just a – he's an 18-year-old kid that has an opinion. And that's not even to get into the stuff that I thought Zach Harper put very well, where he's like, I don't even put this on Ace. This is about Omar Cooper, his quasi-agent, his representative, who is probably steering him in the wrong direction. And even if he wanted to do some of the stuff he was doing quietly, the fact that they're doing it out loud and some of the ways that they're positioning themselves are probably not helpful to make Ace Bailey the most likable kid. But by the same token, some of this is on Ace. And I know Zach kind of pushed back on that. He's like, I don't put any of this on Ace. He is ultimately like 18 is not six. And you look at Trey Johnson, you look at VJ Edgecombe, like you look at these kids who just have it mentally and have it more together. And you can't say it's possible and a positive for these kids and then say, well, it doesn't matter at all for the kids that don't have it. Like that requires a level of cognitive dissonance as well. And so somewhere is a middle ground. And again, it doesn't have to be a defining characteristic. It doesn't mean that Ace Bailey's definitely going to fail or Trey Johnson is definitely going to succeed. But when I think of the mentality that each of them are coming into the league with, it does feel like Johnson's mentality sets him up to be better than Bailey. But we know there's a lot more to it than that, and maybe we actually don't understand Bailey's mentality, or it's been misrepresented by the things he's being told to say by an adult that it seems that he probably shouldn't have trusted. Okay, that's my serious take at the end of the show. We'll talk about it more next week. Now, it's time for silliness to end the show in the form of real things real people said into real microphones. Let's start with a conversation, actually, between Trey Johnson and last year's number 14 overall pick, Bub Carrington, captured by the behind-the-scenes cameras at the NBA draft by the NBA and the Washington Wizards.
Trey, what's up, baby? What's up with you? How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How you feeling?
I'm feeling amazing. I'm feeling like $1 million right now.
And you about to get it, too. But nah, super excited to see you. We've been talking about you for the last month and a half, bro. So just enjoy your night. We gonna see you soon.
Yes, sir. Most definitely.
Bring that energy to Washington. We need it.
I most definitely will do that for sure.
Rose down.
Yes, sir.
There you go. I love that apparently Bub, I'm excited to see if Will Dawkins is asked about this tomorrow. I might go ask him myself. You know, hey, how much do you talk about future prospects with your current players? Because the fact that Bub was like, hey, we've been talking about you for months. I wonder, like, when he says we, is that him and his teammates just from watching Texas play? Or is that he in the front office, he in the coaching staff? But clearly, there was an impression made somewhere in Washington by Trey Johnson, and now he's going to get to work with Bub, starting in Summer League, because I do think Bub and all the guys that got drafted last year are going to be a part of the Summer League. Last but not least, here on a Friday, happy birthday to Bobby Wagner from your good pal, Jaden Daniels.
I want to say a very, very happy 55th birthday to the Hall of Famer, future Gold Jacket, my brother, Bobby Ninja Turtle Wagner. Appreciate you, bro, from day one. You know, he's always a real one. Took care of me, took care of the rookies, took care of your teammates. Tremendous leader, tremendous dad. Love getting to know you and your family, man. Wish you nothing but another year. Hopefully you can see that 56.
Kids, man. Kids. Bobby Wagner, 35 years old today. And, like, I'm at the age now where there's just only a select amount of guys that are still playing sports at my age. It happened quick. It's like, dang. Oh, it's 32. Like, Terry. How can they pay him? He's 30. He's basically dead. And I'm like, man, I covered that guy as a rookie. And I'm way older than that. What my I know it's different careers, but man, the way we talk about athletes, it falls off a cliff quickly. Bobby Wagner, still playing at a really high level. 35 years old today. Happy birthday, Bobby. Sorry, Jaden made fun of you like that. And we shared it on the radio for everyone's entertainment. That sound courtesy of the Commander social media page. All right, that's our show for today. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Shout out to Metal Chris for doing a great job filling in for Anthony, and I'll see you on Monday.